Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Happy New Year, everybody, and we're starting off with some giggles because it's taken me about three goes to actually get Happy New Year out in anything that sounded like the English language. And no, I'm not drunk, I promise you.
Oh, dear, dear.
Oh.
Hello, Maggie, lovely to see you.
Thank you, it's lovely to see you again too, and aren't we lucky we can meet?
Oh, so lucky. Oh. Yeah. Okay, so part of the reason we've got such massive giggles is because Maggie was telling me about all the things that have been advertised to her since
the New Year. Yes, I have this wonderful thing called Facebook Purity. You can find it on Facebook under the page is called Fluff Busting Facebook Purity. And it's an app that removes all the adverts from Facebook on your computer.
Okay.
Which is marvellous. I don't have to suffer the ads on Facebook. It doesn't work for your phones, but it does work on a laptop or a computer. Anyway, Facebook got round it a couple of months ago and it's taken Purity a while to catch up on it. So I've been having adverts for a month or two, which has been quite amusing as a short-term thing. But 1st of January, suddenly, of course, with all the shaming that we were talking about last time, what happens with New Year's resolution, suddenly my feed was filled with, you're fat, you're ugly, you need a better bra, you need this exercise program, you need this life coaching thing. And I just looked at, and all these pictures of elderly women in these great big bras that hold their boobs up as if they were 22, which of course they wouldn't. And I just thought, oh, come on, enough already, and went off and updated my Facebook Purity and now I am safe, thank you. But it is really quite shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I must admit, I forgot there were even such a thing as adverts on Facebook. My kids are all very, very up on making sure that I don't think we have Facebook Purity. We've got
something similar,
some other ad blocker thing. Yes, but yes, the world that's full of adverts. It's entirely lost on me. I must admit, when I do see an advert, I seldom know what it's for. I'm clearly not the target audience.
I was getting some adverts, which I've made note of and I will follow up, but not via Facebook, for all sorts of non-plastic alternatives to Sentinel pads and things like that. And I've still got a whole load of Sentinel pads, washing up pads.
I don't know what a Sentinel pad is.
It's a sponge with a little bit of plasticky wire wool, which you use for cleaning things. And we're still using up mothers.
Right.
And I've been sort of looking out for things to replace them for a while. So there is if you have posted stuff about eco stuff, you are going to get some decent ads, but that was the end of the line. You need a better bra.
Facebook, you naughty boy, you've been looking.
But it actually brought me right to the conversation I wanted to have about shame. I don't know if you've ever watched the Brené Brown YouTube video where she does a TED talk on shame and how it's wired into us as something we believe we are shameful.
Well, I have to say that sitting here talking to Vicar, I would like to point the finger pretty squarely at Christianity and go, isn't that your line?
Totally. It comes back to this idea of original sin or original blessing. And well, we can come back to that and you can throw as many bricks as you like and I'll see if I can field them with a big tennis racket. But I've got a dear friend who's leader of a UK church, part of an American church, and it's a good church. It was one of the ones that I would have been happy to train for in the old days, but they wouldn't have me because I wasn't a graduate. Mm. They've changed things a bit now. But it's one of those churches, it's not a prosperity church, as in you have to tithe, you have to give this amount of money, and if you're good, God will give you the money. But it's actually one that says you can pull your life around with affirmations, and you can heal a great deal of things, and you have to realize that you are in alignment with the Holy One, or you're not, and if you're out of alignment, things don't work. And whether you call that the Holy One, life, the universe, or everything, I think we'd all agree that if you're out of alignment, you're out of alignment, you know. But anyway, this lady got COVID, and her whole church was absolutely outraged that she got COVID because they thought she was a failure.
Oh my goodness.
she wasn't doing her affirmations properly. You know, our minister shouldn't get COVID. There wasn't a lot said, but the atmosphere was such and she could pick it up. But part of that was, she said, in her, the residual shame that she felt. And when I got cancer, I felt shame. Yeah. Because I thought that I should have been better. I should have, you know, I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have done the other. And in fact, people outside the spiritual and holistic sphere were much kinder.
Yeah.
Because they just said, well, people get it. It's random. It's this. I don't know that it is random, but it was very interesting how judgmental the spiritual people could be.
And I find that absolutely extraordinary, not least because there's a implicit in that suggestion is the idea that COVID is somehow not of God.
Exactly.
And that, I found that really bizarre because from my perspective, actually getting COVID, you said it yourself, the what's his name, Stephen Jenkinson, the yes. gods are in the house.
Yes.
And that if COVID has, as we were, you know, one of the very first people to name it as such, as, you know, the divine, the goddess going, yes. sit down, shut up
and think.
Yes. Yes. Think what you're doing. What are you up to?
Yes.
I need a rest.
Yes.
And that to see having COVID as somehow having failed or having fallen out of alignment with the divine is...
Well, it's a knock on from this particular woman has had a diagnosis of cancer in the past. Mm. And that was seen as a failure too.
Okay. You know,
the spiritual person shouldn't get cancer. The spiritual person shouldn't have a heart attack. The spiritual person should be above all these things. And I think actually that's the fundamental misunderstanding of Christianity that's bled through to so many things. Whereas if you go to Christianity to the root of it, you realise that Christianity is all about the need to fail.
Yeah, you're not going to learn much, are you? If you don't fail.
No, it's the need
but also, I cannot see any of those things as a failure.
I agree with you, but the point is that you don't get close to the Holy One unless you know what it's like to be down and dark and dirty with the others.
Exactly.
You know, you can't sit on your ivory tower and go, ew, let me do a proclamation. Oh, that's what popes do, isn't it? Oops, silly me, but yes.
Yeah, I mean there's everything is wrong with that from my perspective. Mm. Apart from anything else, just the idea that there's a kind of a hierarchy, if you like, of experiences, and that if you experience some of the experiences that are available to us in this reality, that you have failed and are wrong, and therefore should be ashamed, is ugly.
Yeah,
at the very least,
and it's binary.
Yes, terribly.
It's totally binary. And the more I learn, the more I realise that unless we are ternary, which is an odd way, that's instead of tertiary, ternary is the one, Trinitarian, if you like, which is the three, the flow, the dance, then you can't get anywhere because binary is always going to be head-to-head with each other. One is right, one is wrong, one is up, one in down. And it's lovely that Kabbalah is ternary because it's got the central column of the consciousness which holds the balance of the right and the left. And I'm so blessed that I'm learning this and I'm actually getting it. And that's what's deepening my faith into original Christianity, is this idea that it is perichoresis, the divine dance. It's the relationship. God is a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a continual moving relationship. And we are in that dance.
Indeed.
And every time the three turns, it creates a fourth. It gives birth.
Ooh, okay. That's interesting. So for me, the two create the third.
Yes, I thought that too. But I mean, reading Cynthia Borgo's book, she's a wonderful Christian mystic from the USA. And she was talking about... how the ternary, she studied Gurdjieff, one of the great mystics, a bit weird, I've always found him too difficult, too complicated for me because I'm a bear of very little brain. But
yeah, I don't think that's true.
Well, sometimes I am, but I interpret the Bible and Kabbalah for people and Cynthia interprets Gurdjieff for people, if you see
right.
what I mean.
Yeah.
She was saying he looked at this system and assumed that it must have been the origin of so many ancient things of this circle, which is, it, and the example that she gave that I read last night, which I like, was like a sailing boat. What makes a boat sail? Wind and the water. But actually, no, because if you've got a boat there without a guiding hand, it's just going to sort of go around in circles or get blown over. You have to have something to guide it into the wind. And then if you've got that third aspect that guides it into the wind, you've got a whole process which counts as the fourth, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yes.
But what if you're talking about something that's simply blowing in the wind, not moving across the water?
Then it's an ordinary ternary. I don't know. what's your question?
Well, then it would be a threesome, not a foursome, would it not?
No, it'd just be wind and water in an object. Yeah, I don't know. I'm only in chapter four. Give me a break. But the thing about it is that what I like is that whenever you discuss this kind of thing, the ternary thing, there's always a mystery. There's always a point, which we've just done, which says, I don't know. And you can allow that. With a binary system, you don't allow mystery.
Yes, because you've got...
It's either that or that.
Yeah, either or.
So one of them's right and one of them's wrong. And I just love moving into this thing of it's both. It's everything. I don't know. I'm going to just stand here and hold the mystery of this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're going to tell me that the vaccinations are wicked and evil, I'll say you're absolutely right. And if somebody else is going to say anyone who turns away from the vaccinations is wicked and evil, I can say you're absolutely right, because that's how you see it. I can stand in the middle. It's all true.
Or none of it's true. Or
none of it's true, yes. And ultimately, I come back to the Kabbalistic thing of if it's a real truth, it's got beauty in it.
Totally agree with that.
And no binary thing has that beauty. It's only in the middle where you can say, I'm just going to sit here with the mystery of it and allow it to work out and allow it to be okay. And I knew I'd got, first time I actually got it was a time over Christmas when I was doing a meditation. And one of the things Richard Rohr said recently, which I absolutely love, was he owned up to the fact that quite often when he does his morning contemplation, he gets up and he's more ragged and angry and cross afterwards than he is during, because it's allowed the stuff to come up. Allowed the stuff to come up and come out and come process. And I was thinking in my contemplation or meditation, what if I don't get to travel abroad again? What if I don't get to go back to Cyprus to see Tim and the family? What if I don't get to go back to America? What if I don't do this? And then I thought, and it completely doesn't matter, because I've done them. I've been there. I've actually done it, been there. And what is this? And it turned me to Mary Oliver's poem, The Snow Goose, which is, I posted it yesterday, because it's just so beautiful about the acceptance that this is here now, and when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
But it was here. Yeah. It was here. Isn't that wonderful? I've done these things. Isn't that wonderful? I don't need to do them again. It would be lovely to do them again, but I don't need to. And the peace in that and the freedom in that. Felt really powerful.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
But shame, we live in this society where I think people are always talking about being controlled. And I don't think you can be controlled if you don't have residual shame. Discuss.
Ooh. Okay, just in case I forget to say it later on, I would love to call anyone listening's attention to a book called Burning Woman by Lucy H. Pierce. I think that's her name. Lucy, certain. It's Lucy Pierce with some letter in the middle, which I think is an H, but there's a chance it isn't. Anyway, it's an absolutely extraordinary treatise on shame and the way we are motivated by shame. And the thing that she points out in the book, which I think is so completely true, is that shame is an extraordinary motivating force.
Yes.
Only whilst it's a secret. And as soon as you name it, as soon as you call it, as soon as it's out in the open, you stop being able to be controlled by it. Because if you like, the worst thing that could possibly happen...
Has happened.
Has happened.
Yes.
In that. So let's say my terrible shame is... I don't know, to go back to your silly adverts, let's say my terrible shame is that I do desperately, in fact, need a new bra, and I'm feeling, you know, very
Judged about my saggy boobs
or whatever, yeah. So as soon as I then announced to the world, oh my goodness, I'm feeling terribly judged about my saggy boobs, the world, that shame has completely lost its hold over me.
Yes.
Because it's been named.
It's been put out into the light,
it's been put
it?
Out yes. into the world, yeah. yeah. And that therefore, the best thing any of us could ever do for our shame and for the way in which it controls us, which she's, yeah. you know, shows over and over again how that is the case. And that I think her kind of point is that this happens really in particular to women.
Yeah.
Because we're trained to be so invested in our image.
Yes.
And that as we are never going to match up to, you know, the Barbie standard, any of us, because she's not real.
and if she were, she'd be crippled.
Oh, my God. That, yes, the more we can just go, yep, look, here they are. This is what a pair of 58-year-old boobs look like.
Yeah.
Bloody grateful to still have two of them. Thanks yeah. very much, universe.
Yeah.
That then they can't manipulate us and control us.
Yes.
Because we named it. We said it out loud. Yeah. We went, hey.
And I'm going to give you a very personal, absolutely accurate example of that, which is that I usually have a bath in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Because you taught me that. And I love having a bath in the dark. Maybe in candlelight, but maybe in pitch dark. Mm-hmm. And I just, a bit like Eileen Caddy, that's when I commune through mm-hmm. the water with the divine, if you like.
Mm.
But in the new house... We hadn't got the water system quite right, so I was actually having to sit in the bath to run the bath to get the right amount of water with the light on. And one of the taps twisted, so I needed the light on.
Mm.
And Lion would come in and talk to me while I was there in the light, and I became aware that I didn't want him to see my naked body like that.
Wow.
And I didn't realise that I had also been hiding it in that respect. I mean, we'd cuddle up naked in the bed and things like that. But hunched over in the bath, I was sort of the,
It's never anyone's best look, is it?
No, not really. Or even twiddling the taps with your toes is never your best look either. But I told him.
Yay, well done.
I said, would you mind, actually said, I feel really embarrassed and ashamed when you come in with the light on. And he was sweet and lovely. And he said, you looked at me lately, things like that. And I haven't minded since.
Yay!
Yes, so that's an absolute example. I voiced my shame. And he said, but I love you.
Yeah.
You know, I love you warts and all, wobbly bits, cellulite and all that and all. And he does. And I look at him and I think, you're my lion.
Yeah.
You're just my lion and you're gorgeous. Yes, you're getting a few age spots on your back. That's like my dad did. Oh, how interesting. Are they okay? Yes, they're fine. I love you. End of.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So naming the shame. Yeah. We could call this episode that, couldn't we?
Naming the shame. Yes.
Naming the shame.
Yeah. Yes. And yes, I encourage you, dear listener, to whatever it is that's coming up that you're thinking, oh, I could never name that. Just do it. Even if all you name it to is an empty room, once you've said it out loud, you've performed the first part of a liberatory magic.
Yes.
In even owning it to yourself.
Yes.
Because typically the only person who's judging you is you.
Mm.
And if you can say it out loud to you, and if you can then hold your own gaze, as it were, in the face of all the oh buts that your ego is going to be doing to you, then so much of it can melt away. We don't even necessarily need another witness, because typically it is ourselves that is judge and jury.
Yes. And genuinely, we're not that important to people.
But also, it's one of the things I find endlessly weird is that we culturally have this thing of like, oh God, they're going to judge me for my, let's just stick with the theme, floppy tits or, you know, whatever.
Fat ass.
Any of those things. But I don't know any women, as far as I'm aware, who look at other women going, oh my goodness, look at the state of those boobs. You know, it's just like, who is it? We imagine.
Well, my mother did.
Oh, did she?
Mm.
Okay. Well, now that she's not here, do you think we could all let go of that one?
I think we could. It's been fascinating and impressive seeing how much of her is residual in me through training. It is training. I don't think it's actually. I don't think it's actually wired in from the very beginning. And there've been a few phrases which have been itching to come out of me that she would have said, "Nope." No, but there's no harm in saying that. You mean it so well. I went, maybe I do, but I didn't like it when it said to me.
Bless you. Yay.
Yes, the shaming in our generation. I mean, what am I, 10 years older than you? Mm. So slightly different generation. It really was the twin set and pearls. My mum never wore jeans.
Blimey, my mum never not wore jeans.
Well, there you are. The 10 years does make all that difference. It was always a skirt and a twin set.
Wow.
And always makeup and always lipstick. Never a day without. Even in the garden, I think she did have gardening trousers. That's fair enough, but that's about it. And you're raised with this, and it goes into the ego as the norm and how it must be. And so much of our lives is still predicated on training that's completely out of date.
Yeah.
Completely out of
date. And just, it occurs to me, I'm always intrigued by the ways in which our preferences are created. So here we are, you've got a mother who always wore skirts, twin sets and pearls, and there you are sat there in jeans.
Yeah.
I had a mother who we used to actually rip the piss out of fairly relentlessly, claiming that she didn't necessarily have real legs because she wore jeans 99% of the time. And on the occasions which were, I mean, probably... It might be true to say that I've not seen my mum in a skirt more than a handful of times.
Interesting. And you always wear skirts?
I don't always wear skirts, but I wear skirts a lot.
Yes.
And, yeah, if poor woman, if she ever got her legs out, everyone would be like, oh my goodness, look, she's got legs! Poor woman. We were merciless, me and my brother.
Anyway, I think it was more with me the being in TV and radio. And I had to be smartly dressed in a skirt when I started as a journalist.
Right.
Actually, you weren't allowed to wear trousers as a female journalist in those days, in the early 70s.
Right.
Well, not at the newspaper I was at, anyway. Mm. And then when you got into radio and TV, there was an image to keep up. So I don't think any of us at Pebble Mill at one even wore slacks at work. We all wore skirts. So it was just in the psyche.
Mm.
It wasn't necessarily right. Nobody ever thought about whether it was right or wrong. So I suppose it's like swearing. I couldn't swear when I was on the radio. I did not swear at all at any time in case it came out on the radio.
Well done.
And now I swear like a trooper.
Sorry. Is it the company you keep defending?
No. I already sunk to the low depths before I met you, which is how we get on. And crying too, being a radio reporter. I remember reading the news throughout the Falklands.
Mm.
You couldn't cry. Nowadays, presenters have much more leeway than we had in those days. Mm. But you had to read about the sinking of HMS Coventry when I was in the Midlands, and you've just had to read it. You had to do the interview. You had to do it live. You had to have control on that. And ever since I left then, within about 6 months, I blubbered everything.
Yeah. God, I'd be useless. Make a reporter.
You probably would. There's this thing that you go into, which is showtime. It's showtime. You put on that mask. And that's, of course, what the word persona is. When it comes from Greek plays, the persona was the mask they put on to amplify their voice.
Mm.
So that's exactly what you do if you're on the radio or if you're doing a funeral or something like that. You put on that performance mask.
Mm.
The difficulty is when you believe it.
Yeah. Or can't take it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. How are we doing for time?
Oh, we're doing fine. We're on 23 minutes.
Woo! Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very good. Okay. Have we, is that it? Have we done with shame?
I think we've probably done with shame.
Jolly good.
So it's basically, if you feel shame, tell the room.
Totally.
Yeah. And if you can. Oh, yes. And this thing I mentioned earlier about people don't care that much. We're not that important. I remember when I was in this important Cabalot group in London and my husband left me and I felt huge shame because he and I had always thought any two good people can make a relationship work. and he did a runner. And I went to see my spiritual teacher to talk about it. And he was very kind to me. He said, "I'm really impressed you're not in bits." And I said, "Well, I am in bits, but I'm, you know, training and all that kind of thing." And he said, "Well, just tell your bits that this is a 9-day wonder and nobody really cares."
Yeah.
You know, and I actually, that shattered some of my bits because I thought we were more important than that. People would go, "How could Jonathan and Maggie break up?" But in fact, once I'd got over that, so many people said, "Do you know what we always wondered? How the hell did you stay together so long?"
Wow.
You know, and they said, "We had utter admiration for you for sticking it out." And I was going, "Really?"
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Isn't it? You know, you, the shame, once you speak it, it can be flipped over. You know, yeah. People started saying, "Oh, well, as a couple, you were a bit holier than thou." And you go, "Oh, God, the humiliation, yes, were we? Oh, God, oh, God." But that takes me back to Richard Rohr, who prays every day for a daily humiliation to keep him. Him.
Oh, that we had to pray for such things.
But it is so worrying. The landlord sent a text this morning. Before Christmas, we had sent him a text saying that the gale knocked down the gatepost. Because you've got to keep them informed of these things. But it was all right because it was propped up okay. And then I sent him another just before Christmas saying it started attacking delivery people. So I've tied it up with rope and it's behaving so far, but impossible in the new year. Could we have a new one? I got a text this morning, which is sort of pretty much New Year, saying, "Could you give me a call when you've got a minute?" And I immediately went into, "What have I done wrong?"
Oh, yeah.
Such old rubbish.
Yeah.
What have I done? No, he was just wanting to know what the dimensions of the gatepost were.
But so, isn't, I mean, that is just the most perfect example of exactly why it's such a good idea just to... One of my favourite questions is, what's the worst that could happen?
Yes.
And that as soon as we start really lifting up the skirts of what is it exactly that you imagine is going to happen? Yeah. Dear Susie, your knickers are in such a knot about whatever.
Yeah.
What is it that you think is going to happen? And that if you then go, well, you know, the roof could fall in and everyone could point and stare and my knickers could be down and that actually, when you get to it, it's like, and then that typically the very worst that could happen isn't that bad. A lot of the time, it's really not that bad. And that... that even if it is that bad, you know, the worst that could happen is
losing someone.
Someone could die. Someone you love could die. Is that in the end, I always come back to, well, right now, that hasn't happened.
Yes.
And so right now, I would much rather live in the, you know, perhaps the blissful ignorance of, well, it has happened, but... to live in the joy of the terrible thing hasn't happened, so it's a good day. Which is possible, you know, in some ways, if the terrible thing is happening, then that's sticking your head very firmly in the sand. But there's something to be said for that in some ways too. That we can, if we live having faced up to whatever the worst thing that could happen...
It's lesser. The worst thing is lesser.
The worst thing is lesser. But also that there's this beautiful freedom in, okay, I looked it squarely in the eye. There it is. But it's still over there in the corner. It's not coming for me yet.
Yes.
So let's now live in the gratitude, even if all the gratitude I can muster is that thing in the corner is not coming for me yet.
Yeah. I have space.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say to you listening that both Susie and I have prominent Scorpio in our charts, so we are good at looking darkness in the face. Yeah. And different aspects of astrology aren't so good. So we are talking personal experience here. But I have another friend who's a Scorpio who was a very dear friend years ago, and she had a lump in her breast at the age of about 28, I think, and she wasn't married and she did want children. And she was terrified, obviously, and she was going to go and have all the tests and everything. But I did do that exactly that. I said, what is your worst fear? Is it death? And she said, no, that I'll be infertile.
Mm.
And I said, right, then have eggs harvested now.
Mm.
And she went, oh.
Yeah, great.
You know, and because there was, we actually looked at what her worst fear was and took it away.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's many things where you can't take it away, where somebody is definitely, well, no, not even if somebody's definitely going to die. This gives me an excuse to tell the story of Bill. We have a guy on the Kabbalah course. Well, it's not a course, it's a Tuesday evening free group that I run every year. And one of them is called Bill Hebron. He's a Jewish guy. He's 98 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this 98-year-old on Zoom every week, and he keeps me in my place because his Jewish knowledge and his Hasidic Kabbalah knowledge is deep and long, but he's got the humility to study with a non-Jewish woman half his age, practically.
Mm.
You know, and sometimes we scrub up against each other, but we get on pretty well, and he's a very valuable and much-loved member of the group. And he needed a hip replacement.
Mm.
And he went and had it at 96.
Go him.
And it was great. He came back to the group. And then the week after he came back to the group, he had a small heart attack. And then he got went into hospital and got pneumonia.
Ooh, poor bloke.
And of course, his son contacted me and said, please pray.
Mm.
Which I can't from anything else for a Jewish family to ask a nominal Christian minister to pray. That tells you about the level that we can work at,
yeah,
because and the level that we should be working at, as in no boundaries here. So I actually called the group together, and it was interesting because I had to go against all my training, because the group I was trained in was very detached from the personal things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a girl, and I have a different group, you know, and I have Cancer and Scorpio in my charts, and I do care. So I just sent a letter around saying, I'm going to do the Litany of Raphael for Bill Hebron at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. We're supposed to be taking a break over Christmas so I can have a few Tuesdays off, which is really nice. Mm. If anybody wants to join me, please do. And Bill telephoned me from the hospital himself. He asked for my phone number and phoned me and asked me to pray for him, which was also an act of great humility. Mm. And said he was scared, bless him, because Jewish belief in the afterlife is not as pleasant as Christian belief in the afterlife can be.
Mm.
Christian belief in the afterlife can also be rubbish, but that's another story. And I told him what we were doing, and he said, can I join in?
Oh.
So I set up my little Bose speaker, which I won from the Radio Times for my letter.
Did you?
Yes, yes. That was about the violence in a TV show.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I managed to set it all up. I'm technological Philistine, but we managed it. So that last Tuesday evening, we had a group of 15 of the group turned up.
Nice.
On their Christmas holidays, just to say the litany about Raphael so that Bill could hear it. And I also did a petition for him. And he turned the corner the next day.
Yay!
Absolute miracle, you know, and he's now home again and bright and bouncy. And it was just the fact that the expectation was 96-year-old in hospital pneumonia will die.
Mm.
As my mother, 93, went into hospital, died.
Mm.
You know, but you don't have to work with that. Even if you've got that worst-case scenario, I will always say go for the hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because hope is by its very nature hopeful. I don't believe in false hope.
Mm.
Hope is hopeful.
Yeah.
And if you can get down to the darkest point and find there's a solution that you could deal with, that helps you go to the hope.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always say to anyone, do whatever you can to recreate hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if hope means going for the chemo, then go for the chemo.
Mm.
If hope means not going for the chemo, don't go for the chemo.
Yeah.
You are one individual person and nobody can tell you what you should do with your life. Your intuition will know.
Yeah.
Once you're out of the shame. Because the shame will make you take the written path.
Yes.
After Henry died, I lost a friend after his death. I think I walked away from a friend after his death because she basically said to me, if you hadn't taken him on that holistic path, he wouldn't have died.
Bloody hell. What an outrageous thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was wrong. He should have just gone and had chemo. But they told us quite clearly that there was nothing they could do.
Wow.
So we took the hope.
Not surprising, you're not talking to her anymore.
No, bless her cotton socks. But that, oh, there's a whole story about shame in that whole relationship, actually, both of us. And that's another thing. If you have a friend who is locked into shame and can't come out of it, she's going to take you down. Or he's going to take you down. So one of the things that I think it's important to look at our friendships and whether they lift our hearts or lower them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are always going to have to be people in your life that do lower your heart. So you can't necessarily walk away from your family, for example. Maybe you can, maybe you can't.
Mm.
But Stuart Wilde always had this lovely thing, and this is something I do at the New Year. It's not a New Year's resolution. Is look through your address book and see who in it lifts your heart and who in it drops your heart and who in it is neutral. And everybody who lifts your heart, invite them out for lunch.
Oh, nice.
That's assuming you can do lunch at the moment, of course.
Okay. And what about the people who drop your heart? Maybe whatever your story is with them, it's also worth looking at. Is this absolutely, definitely to do with them? Or is this me projecting things onto them?
Is this my
them?
Shame?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just look at the relationship with people. And sometimes you can park a person while you do your own work and it all works out afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And they either then... It's very true what Louise Hay said, which is that if you change, everybody else will adapt or move away.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So you can always sort the situation by changing yourself.
Which is the only person you have any right or control over changing.
Yeah, and there are occasions when I will go, oh God, why has it got to be me? And I say, because it's my life and my universe.
Yeah.
If I don't like where I am, change direction.
Indeed. Upon those wise words.
Upon those wise words. Happy New Year, everybody. Don't beat yourself up. And, you know, if you want another mince pie or piece of chocolate, do have it. Do have it, because on your deathbed you're not going to be saying, I wish I'd spent more time at the office, I wish I'd spent more time dieting, I wish I hadn't had that extra mince pie. At least I don't think you will, and if you are, I apologise.
Yes, if that's the one that kills you.
No, I was just thinking that. Oh God, now I'm going to get letters now from somebody saying my mother had one more mince pie and she dropped dead. Well, if you've got to go eating a mince pie, there are worse ways.
It's true.
There are. God bless. See you next week.
Bye.